Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It's Friday, March 4th, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California, and it's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we're taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. Right after the news, about 15 minutes from now, you're welcome to call in with your questions regarding your computer problems or printer problems or technical stuff. We're here to help. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can, of course, go to geekspeak.org and click on the Contact Us. We'll get that in an email in our inbox and respond to you on air. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about 20 minutes. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air and with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Communications Manager for Transmeta, and Miles Elam's back with us today. He's been gone for weeks at a new job. He was able to skirt away. I'm hoping they're not listening and their boss, he won't get fired. Wait, if he gets fired, he'll come back. Miles, welcome back to Geek Speak. Thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here.
Now, Miles, what's your new title? I do need to put it in the, you know, the stuff I say.
Technical trainer.
Technical trainer. How official. Now, you're working for the same company that our other geek who's missing in action, John Tracy.
Yeah.
Now, he gets trained by you, right?
Yeah, although since we both started around the same time, the training's actually been fairly mutual.
Is there a rivalry at all?
Not so much.
Okay.
There has been a rivalry in terms of he likes to run on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and I've been...
And you're lazy?
Yeah, I guess that's the best way to describe it. And so he's been a push in the locomotion.
When does he run?
Just during lunch break.
Oh, okay.
Technical trainer for what company?
For Surf Control. Uh-huh. I'm like, what's the name of the company again?
And they watch the waves coming in?
They control the waves that are coming in.
Yeah, they're a content filtering company. So they set up for spam filtering for... protection against spyware, to keep people from browsing adult sites on the net, stuff like that.
All right. So are you, like, more with the FCC now? You're, like, more in that kind of realm of control content, things of that nature?
No, absolutely
not. Okay. This is just corporate, so it's okay. All right, Miles, I appreciate you coming in. I'm going to start the news off with Sean because he's sitting there so patiently. Sean?
Oh, hi.
Hi. Good morning. How you doing, man?
I forgot I was at a radio show.
Yeah, that's right. We're here.
So
the
this
headphones
week-
on, clue you off.
Oh, yeah, I'm turning up my... Ooh, that's better. Okay, so IDF was this week, Intel Developer Forum, spring 2005. Took place at the Moscone Convention Center in San Francisco. A lot of news came out of there. A lot of it technical. Looks like Intel's moving more towards consumer-based devices. And as far as what they're doing in their microprocessor side, they're adding more cores onto their processor. This is not new news, but they did name it. They're moving away from the Pentium 4 brand and moving towards the Pentium D for their dual core processors.
Oh, I mean the processor itself has dual core.
The processor itself will have dual core, which means that it's basically two processors in one. For real. I mean, this is not using hyper-threading technology. This is actually putting two cores.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening is transistors are getting so small. You know, Moore's law says every 18 months the number of transistors doubles, but they're also shrinking. So you've got all this space that needs to be used. And it looks like the best way to use that is by adding more processor cores.
Mm-hmm.
You can do twice the amount of work if you have the right software. So Pentium D for those dual-core chips. And their Pentium 4 Extreme Edition is dropping the number 4, and it's just going to be the Pentium Extreme Edition. And these chips are all going to run at about 2.8 to 3.2 gigahertz. The Pentium Extreme Edition will start at 3.2. That'll be their high-end chip for now. Yeah, it'll have hyper-threading as well, which is kind of like trying to run multiple threads on a single core. Not as powerful as having dual core, of course. And they're also going to start stacking more memory on top of chips. They talked a lot about die stacking. It looks like they estimate they can put about 256 megabytes on top of a CPU, and then they might be able to even stack more on top of that.
So we're talking about like above the transistors that are on the board, putting more data.
Yeah, well, memory usually sits beside the chip.
Right.
Now they're going to actually start stacking on top of the chip, too. There's latencies involved, but there are ways to get around that. This is really, you know, it's in its infancy right now.
Sure.
But this is where chips could go.
Great. Thanks for the update on Intel stuff. You didn't go to that show, I'm assuming, but since you're in the processor realm at Transmeta, you keep abreast.
Pretty much.
All right. Thank you very much, Sean, for that. Miles, I'm going to go to you, sir, for a news bit.
Yeah, Jeff Raskin, he's the man most credited with the creation of the Apple Macintosh, as a GUI pioneer, interface expert, Apple employee number 31, has passed away due to cancer, February 26th, 2005.
Thank you, Miles.
It was named the Macintosh because it was named after his favorite fruit.
Really? So he named it?
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. He's probably on this. Do you remember the Mac Pluses? I think. Well, actually, maybe you don't. You weren't involved in Macs at that point.
They were in the Mac computer labs at school.
Mac Plus. Sure. Maybe it's the 512, like the first Mac that looked at that gray kind of box with a monitor and built into it. If you open up the case and looked in the back paneling, it was signed by all the people that helped develop it. It's very cool. They signed the mold. I'm sure his signature's on that. Thank you very much for the update.
Also, Reverend Walter Halloran, who participated in the 1949 exorcism that inspired the movie The Exorcist, died at the age of 83.
And that's geek-related because...
Exorcist is cool.
Thanks for that update. Miles, back at you.
Phishing, P-H-I-S...
Trying to get people's data by giving them sampling of falsehoods.
Fraud. Mm. That's the good name.
That's what
it.
The F on phishing stands for, fraud. Okay, go on.
Well, P-H.
I know. Sorry.
There's a new... a bill coming up through Congress talking about putting in jail time for phishing. Because currently, someone actually has to be taken in by it, has to actually click through.
But it's not a crime to say, hey, give me your content.
Right, and the identity theft has to have occurred and a transaction has to have occurred for there to have existing wiretapping and,
right.
and fraud.
How much jail time are we talking about?
We are talking about, I'm sorry, as I
like years
again, 5 years and fines up to $250,000.
For just attempting to do a phishing.
For people who create fake websites designed to con customers into giving them their personal information.
It's interesting because you could also think of those sites as, depending on the way they're done, like a fake, fake PayPal site that actually might have slight wordage that is trying to be humorous, is trying to make fun of PayPal. Mm-hmm. And that's a First Amendment right to be able to do something like that. So it's skirting the edge. I mean,
this isn't talking about satire, though. What you're talking about is satire.
Well, what I'm saying is, how can you show the difference between satire and between someone trying to get illegal information?
Whether you have a form that says, give me your Social Security number and your ID and your Visa card.
People sending out emails on behalf of eBay.
I can imagine a situation.
Information. That's phishing too, right?
I can imagine a situation where producing a site for an art project or something, where they do exactly that, and when the information is submitted, they make some social commentary on how you're giving your private information.
Those students should go to jail. They shouldn't be doing that kind of stuff. the fact that they're getting information from people without their knowledge, especially financial.
So basically they're making a bill that makes asking for information illegal.
Mm. Acquiring information through nefarious means to be used
it's just
for illegal purposes.
It's just interesting. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay, so Microsoft has announced that 64-bit Windows will be out this year. In fact, it'll be out this April. They announced that at Intel Developer Forum. The video game board has added a new rating for video games for tweeners. Those kids who are, older than 10 but not quite a teenager yet. So the new category is E10 Plus category. So when you go to buy a video game now and you have, let's say, 11, 12-year-old, look for the E10 Plus. I guess that tells you it's okay. And Apple tests 24-hour chat support. The option is available for iMac customers only. But if you bought your machine in the past 90 days, if you need help, you might want to check out the 24-hour chat. That's
all right.
Kind of cool, actually.
Thank you, Sean. Miles?
Yes, in terms of wireless networks, there's been a push recently for municipalities to set up a wireless network. So basically, if you go downtown into a city, to be able to just open up a laptop and be able to surf. This, however, is met with some resistance, specifically from the telecom industry. They don't want people to be able to skirt, you know, a DSL line or whatnot. They want people to actually pay for their wireless access on a per-user basis.
Mm-hmm.
So a telecom bill is being proposed in Texas to end free internet access from a municipality basis. Like,
wait,
that cities would not be able to do it.
Who's forwarding this bill? Who's pushing this legislation?
So
there's legislation in effect that would make municipalities not be able to provide free internet access.
Right. And
that seems like completely something that the people should decide whether they want to have internet access.
This is something that's actually been going through in Pennsylvania, but the city of Philadelphia has already gone through most of the early trials to setting up large Wi-Fi or a, I'm trying to think of what the term is for a metropolitan area, metropolitan area network.
Okay.
And there have been specific provisions for it. They're basically saying in that bill, well, Philadelphia is already well on their way, so we'll let them go, but we're going to block all the other ones. Just a curious state of events. So if you really want to be able to go to a town and open up a laptop, for example, and be able to browse the web, if you think that would be useful, I personally think it would help commerce, then get on to the horn with your representative or, you know, Congress critter.
All right. Thank you, Congress critter. Thank you, Miles, for that update.
Nice.
Didi, are you with us? We'll give it a second. We're going through the internet. There you are. You unmuted your microphone. Hi, Didi. We just covered a little news story that I wanted you to chime in on, the idea that asking for, like, a phishing thing where it's actually an art project could possibly be illegal under this bill. Would that make you a criminal?
It could. It could definitely, because we've been working on trying to educate users on internet security issues, and one of our ideas was to pass around a fake phishing scam which would lead you to a website telling you how to avoid this in the future. Not asking for any information per se, but just how easy it is.
Right, but that first email would be technically a phishing scam, and because you're trying to pretend like you're someone else. So you'd send this out about some bank, maybe one that no one's actually done this to, so, you know, some bank that specializes in senior citizens where less computer use is happening. So they're going to be targeted at some point. So you find that first, you produce this phishing scheme thing, and they go to a website and it says, whoa, you need to learn this information because it's very dangerous that you clicked on this link, and explain that to them. So that's the project. That's one of the projects that you're thinking about doing at ITP and NYU?
Yeah, we were thinking about doing it, but we were really kind of worried about it now that there's a possible bill in progress. It justifies that worry, so we realize that it's a controversial thing to try.
Right. Okay, thank you for that update.
Well, it's not a law yet, so you're not breaking the law as it
do it quick,
right
Didi,
now.
Do it
yeah.
quick. All right, thanks. Sean, can you hit us with the next test?
Yeah, I got some very important news here. Bill Gates is getting an honorary UK knighthood.
He's not British.
Or he did.
I thought you couldn't get a knighthood unless you're British.
He'll become a knight commander of the most excellent order of the British Empire.
How much money did that cost? Yeah, not that it matters for Bill Gates.
I guess this happened already, so I guess he kneeled in front of a sovereign who tapped him on the shoulder with a sword.
Yes, but
so he is Sir.
No, he is not Sir.
He can't be Sir.
Oh, I see.
He'll have letters after his name.
You mean knighted,
right.
But it's not Sir. What is it, Miles? Come on, you know.
He's just Knight Commander of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire. I don't know.
That's a lot of letters to add next to your name.
But since he is not English,
he can't be
called Sir.
Right.
Unless he gives up his American citizenship.
Right.
I don't know. Probably not. Okay, so Fujitsu is going to be making a 120-gig laptop drive. Very cool. This is the very first one of this size. I think the largest I can think of is 60, so this is pretty big. And it'll be available in May. So if you're buying a new laptop in May, April timeframe, I'll look around for that. XM is hiking its monthly fee by 30% to $12.95 a month. Yeah, that's quite a bit. So, I don't know. That's just the news for there. And And ATI has introduced a new affordable graphics chip. It's the Radeon X300 SE, bringing... this is kind of has to do with PCI Express, which we talked with Intel about 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And it's a shared memory chip, but it's pretty advanced, and it should bring more gaming to the masses.
Now, ATI, we were setting up for a show very soon.
Yeah,
they're very busy
to
with this
today.
Launch, and one of the reasons why they didn't come on is
I think Intel Developer Forum pretty much tied everyone up.
So we'll get them back on. We'll talk more about their cards and about PCI Express. Miles, got another story for us today? Because I'd love to start taking calls. So it's your call. If you want to talk to people or if you want to talk by yourself, what is it?
I'll do one more story.
All right. You selfish bastard. Okay, yes, go on.
Music labels are looking to raise prices on downloaded music. They're thinking, oh, well...
Wait, music like iTunes and...
Right, by making the price...
Oh, the music labels want more money, which means... Is that what it is?
Yes.
Which means that the services will have to be raised, too, unless they swallow the fee, the extra cost.
Right. Before, they were saying, oh, well, it's a low price. We're seeding the market, getting people to do it. And yet, I find it funny, because one of the reasons why iTunes was so popular is that each song being, what was it, 89 cents or 99
cents? 98 cents, I think.
98 cents. You know, it's pretty close. If you think of a song as an album as being 12 songs, for example, it's pretty close to the price of a CD.
Right.
And yet they're going, oh, they're not charging enough. We need to start charging, start upping it up a little bit more. And this ends up being the same issues that people had with CDs in the first place.
Okay, so what percentage
so
of that? What percentage of that goes to the artist?
Well, if
these hike fees? That's what I want to know.
That's a good question.
Well, anything like CDs, then...
Nothing.
well, maybe about a quarter.
But it's the RAAA that's interested in raising this fee. Are they raising this fee because they want to give more money to the artists?
That's what I want to know.
RIAA.
RIAA, sorry. I ain't tripling.
Hey, RAAA.
That last A is something I don't want to say on air.
It's kind of a, hey.
So basically, we're not sure if this is going to go through. Is that correct?
This is just rumbling so far.
Rumbling.
Oh, this is non-news?
Well, it's
talking about doing it, and now we're seeing what public reaction is going to be.
Millions are talking about it.
Reaction can't come without people knowing about
this
it.
This is a Slashdot story, right? So a lot of people are talking about this right now.
Yeah. So we'll hear...
It's true. It's Slashdot gets a lot of
we'll
people.
Hear, we'll hear a lot more about
to
the story.
MSNBC article.
Okay.
So it's big. I would assume that they're doing this because they want to push people back onto CDs. You think that's what it is? I mean, because if they're making the same kind of money on a CD versus on online, what's the incentive?
Oh, I don't know that they're making the same amount of money. Also, some CDs cost more than others.
Right.
While for iTunes, from my understanding, all the songs are uniformly the same price.
They actually modify them to some degree.
So I can read the title. Music labels may seek higher downloads.
Yeah.
So they must be testing the waters, right?
Yeah.
Now.
It doesn't sound like a good idea to me. I personally, I've purchased a few things through iTunes on short order. We needed something, and needed that song, so we did it, and kind of tested it out. And I have those on my Mac, and when I switched Macs, I was able to transfer the files. I think I re-downloaded them, I'm not sure. I can do that a certain amount of times, and then I can't approve, and I've got to figure out the conversation with Apple that I need to do to get the songs back. But the thing is, they're not physical, and they're only on this machine, and I feel like I've got money invested in this computer, and it's kind of strange. At the same time, they're only $1 a piece, so it's almost like I think of that as disposable. Like, I listened to the song a few times, therefore, if I have to pay for it again,
and where do you listen to it at?
From my laptop.
Yeah, but how many do you listen to music?
Yeah. So many people have iPods now.
You can transfer to iPods, too.
I never listen to music like that,
But I do have a question, though, with regard to all of this. Right now, CDs cost a certain amount, and a lot of that money comes from putting it onto a CD, having the material for it, putting it into packaging, putting it into a jewel case, getting the liner notes for it, then shipping it through the postal service to a shop to be able to put it on there.
There's a lot of markup along the way, that's for sure.
I'm finding it hard to believe that, because the prices per song, if you divide it up evenly, are not that far different. Where the cost justification is to say it needs to be that much more for something that has
effectively
zero distribution costs.
Maybe when Apple started this, they said, look, your distribution costs for all of this, your production line, all these things cost this much money. But we'll give you that much money if we can sell the songs online. So maybe the music industry is not taking it, maybe they get the same percentage on online sales as they do for CD sales, except that they're not in control of everything. And, I mean, there must be other reasons involved. also the different prices of CDs. You want to be able to control your when you're selling stuff. You want to be able to control the first release to be more expensive for a couple weeks, and then it drops down in cost because the people that are really into it will buy it, and then the average people will buy it. So Apple doesn't do that on their site.
But they don't have control? I mean, they're still the copyright owners. They can still borrow.
Well,
Apple
the contract they have probably with Apple is a trial period contract for a certain amount of money, and now they're saying, well, we want to be able to do these different things. It's probably a leveraging thing. Well, we'll pay more attention to it. I did want to mention, by the way, last week we had a whole discussion about Apple not giving FireWire cables in their new iPods, and we went off on this idea that Apple would be dropping FireWire in favor of USB 2. I don't know what happened. I must not have had enough coffee last week. Basically, that's not going to happen. Apple's not letting
go of FireWire. Well, that's what CNN reported.
That's what CNN reported. That's true. We did kind of have a good source in that regard, but the truth is that most Windows machines don't have FireWire cables, and Macintoshes though have FireWire and USB. So Apple went, well, the iPod can do FireWire or USB, but we're shipping with a FireWire cable, extra expense. Let's not ship that cable anymore. That's why they dropped it. Not a big deal, not a big scare. If you've got a camcorder that has FireWire, I wouldn't worry about Apple.
I bet the feedback from that news had it made Apple step back.
Oh, you think so? I think they had a different stance.
Totally.
Stance,
yeah.
Interesting. All right, one more news story, and I think that's a good thing to do at this point. Sean,
well, sure, give me a hard time, but
well,
Sean,
you know,
is
Sean's
one.
Prettier. No offense, but
yeah, Miles is never here. Go for it, Miles.
No. I'm done.
I'm sorry. I'm
all right. Well, then I'll do this. You got questions and comments for us? We're here standing by. The phone number is 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org to send us an email. I do have a message in email form that we got earlier today. We'll go ahead and answer that from Jason from Jacksonville, Alabama, it looks like. Jacksonvilles are everywhere, aren't they?
Yeah.
Alabama, it looks like. Jacksonville. He asks, the subject is flash drives. What are they? And what are they used for? Miles, what's a flash drive?
Flash drives are, for example, the thing I have around my neck.
You plug them in and they flash really bright.
They usually fit into a USB socket, and they're basically like a very large, very convenient floppy drive. But there's no moving parts. They're usually the size of a pack of Wrigley's gum. And they just fit onto any computer that has a USB socket. You plug it in, and then you have a new drive. And you're able to have, you know, anything from 32 megs to a couple of gigabytes now.
Okay. I'm trying to type that out because I don't know if actually Jason from Jacksonville, Alabama is actually listening right now. But I'll do that after the show. We'll continue with the show. Miles, thanks for that. If you would like to ask us email questions, you're welcome to do so by going to geekspeak.org. And, of course, we'll take your phone calls at 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877. And while we're waiting for calls to come in, I will go ahead and go to Sean with the last news story for today. Sir.
Yeah.
I tricked you.
You did. You sure did. Yeah, I think I pretty much hit all my news.
Okay,
TiVo recorded some new patent. Yeah.
Hey, what's up with the whole TiVo and Apple merger thing? Is that happening or is that gone?
I know John bought a bunch of stock on that rumor.
Yeah, and did pretty well for
he's a doing
while.
Pretty well. But I don't know. It hasn't come, nothing's come of that.
All right. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
The public is invited to the 2005 Sanctuary Currents Symposium to learn about the current health of the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary on Saturday, March 12th, from 8:45 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the University Center, 6th Street, Building 29 on the California State University Monterey Bay campus. Information is available at 647-4209.
You're listening to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments, now's the time to call. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can, of course, use the Internet. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us.
This week on This American Life, a man fires his own mother. Another man stops speaking with his sister for 3 decades. Another man goes out and campaigns for his Republican brother in a political race, even though he himself is a Democrat. Stories of family businesses, this week on This American Life, which is this Sunday at 10 a.m., right after Car Talk on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
This program is supported by a grant from Cruzio, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, and MySQL, now with nationwide access. Information about Cruzio membership is available online at cruzio.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxel. In the air with me are Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland, and via the internet, Dee Dee Hubbard from New York. Please join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can use the internet, visit geekspeak.org, click on Contact Us. And just one note for our internet listeners, that 800 number works in California only. If you'd like to contact us when you're outside of California, just please email us. And we're going to go ahead and start taking calls because that's why we're here today, to help people or confuse them. We'll see which it is once we get the first question, which is from Mike of Santa Cruz. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you, Lyle. Listen, here's my problem. About almost a month ago now, my domain name was spoofed, and I've been getting thousands of emails a day that are rejections and bounces from all over the world, from Viagra ads and all kinds of weird stuff that's being sent out under my name. Uh-huh. I told my server, Earthlink, about it now 3 different times. They've always referred me to this abuse thing that they want me to send stuff to. And I've asked them to set up a shadow box. My son told me about it. I don't know what the heck that is. But they haven't done it. They don't do it. They don't respond. I'm going nuts. And I'm wondering, if I change servers, can somebody else fix that problem for me? A lot of problems here.
It's a pretty complicated problem, actually. It's possible that they're sending email through your website. There's these Perl scripts and stuff, CGI scripts, that allow you to make contact forms, and sometimes the programming in that can be hacked, and people use those to send mail. If that's the case, your service provider should help you. Your service provider is Earthlink, is that what you said?
Yes.
When your site's being hosted, first off, what's your domain? If you don't mind telling us.
What is it?
What is your domain? Yeah.
Oh, townscribe.com.
Townscribe. Okay. It's a good domain.
I have a wedding business and a mm-hmm. writing business, and its advertising's out, so I can't just change it.
Right. And basically what's happening is you're getting a whole bunch of bounce messages saying that
this I'm sending them all these horrible ads. They are. Some of them come back to me. I've read them, and they're awful.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be 2 different things. One is, it could be totally disassociated with any of the equipment that you control.
Uh-huh.
And someone could just be using that as the reply email address, which is very unfortunate for you, but nothing you can do about it, except for change your domain name. Is it from multiple users on that domain?
No, just me.
Just your email address.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's unfortunate. Most likely, that could be the case. The second is, and the one you can control, is that they're using the web server that your site is hosted on to send spam. But Earthlink should be managing that for you, no problem. So let me ask you this. Do you have any web forms on your site that allow you to receive email?
Forms?
Yeah,
or
forms.
Is your email address posted on your website?
Yes, I do.
You do have a web form?
Well, it's a click on it to pop up a message thing for me.
Okay, so when someone clicks on that on your site and they get a pop-up, is that their email that gets popped up or a different web page that gets popped up?
Oh, no, it's just an email.
Just an email address. Okay, uh-huh. That's unfortunate. Now that your email address is out there and being used in this fashion, there's probably nothing you can do about it. Sean, would you agree?
Well, you could disconnect it for 3 to 4 months and... Hopefully.
The problem is that for some reason someone's using your email address to send out messages. There's another possibility. It's possible that you have a virus on your home computer that's sending out messages.
Actually, I had my computer repair person came over about 2 weeks ago into this thing and was going nuts trying to figure this out. So he mm-hmm. took the computer home, disconnected it, dismantled it basically. He said he found a Trojan, which it took him hours to erase.
Mm-hmm.
Tracked down, and that it was virus and Trojan free when he returned it, but all this email is still coming back.
Well, how long has it been since he did that?
2 weeks.
Darn. Okay, well, it could be that your machine got reinfected. Less likely, I guess, since you had someone work on it.
You don't have another
Miles,
machine on
Sean,
your network, do you?
Help me.
Well, he put up all these detectors, AVG and spyware and... I don't know, there are at least 3 different programs that just seem to run continuously, although sometimes the thing's running and sounding like a popcorn machine.
Sounds to me like it's spam.
Uh-huh.
Because you published your email address.
No, I think the Trojan was sending out emails, and that worked for some reason, so the spam was starting to
use. Are people still getting those emails from you? Or are you just getting spam?
I'm getting the rejects every day.
Some spammer out there is using your email address as the reply to field. There's really nothing you can do about it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You can definitely report that happening, but unfortunately, the way that the mail protocols online are, there's no restriction to what the reply address is. Anybody can make an email address with the reply address of someone else. So when they do that, the person that the reply address is from, when the message doesn't get through, receives the bounce. The spammer doesn't want to receive the bounce because they don't care. All they're trying to do is hit as many people as possible. So unfortunately, there's nothing you can do. You could change your email address, just your email address, and that would help. As long as the machine doesn't have a virus on it, that's one thing I would make sure of. But it sounds like you did. And then the second thing is making sure, I think the website idea with the CGI script is probably not happening. I'm almost sure it's not happening. I don't think Earthlink would allow that. So I think that's the thing, is that someone, for some reason, thinks your email address is a good one to send messages.
I was saying, if you disconnect your email address for
a month, won't matter. It won't matter unless they decide that they don't want to send messages like that anymore.
I can't afford to disconnect my email address since I make my living off of it.
I would
maybe
that'd be very difficult.
I would suggest that you.
Is there something he can do?
Ignore it, basically.
He could block it, send it to a junk folder?
Yeah, you could definitely
send it. Well, I'm doing that. I don't know how many millions of these rejects my junk folder will hold, but I know.
I suggest you do this. Get Earthlink to give you a second email account. They probably will. They could probably give you five. Make it some other email address that you would like. You know, maybe it's your last name or whatever, something different. Have two email boxes. And slowly migrate your business flow over to the new one. And just
don't publish this new address on your website.
Retire your old address.
Yeah.
And
so
the new address, don't put on your website.
I've got a web page. I'm online. I want people to contact me for my business. You're going to have to phone me? They can't send me an email?
No, the way to do it is this. You get a web form and you put it on your website. So Earthlink's going to have features allowing you to produce a web contact form. The person goes to that web contact form, they put a message in there, and they push submit, and that gets emailed to you. But the sender never hears what your email address is. The other thing you could do is make an image of your email address and put it on your website and say, here's my email address. For spam reasons, it's not clickable. Just type this in your email account. Those are the two things you should do. We do that on GeekSpeak. That's why if you go to geekspeak.org, you won't find any email addresses, but you will find contact pages that you fill out a form.
Or you can make it clickable, just don't put your email address to fill in.
No, that won't work. Clickable won't even do it.
Clickable, but no address shown.
That should work, right?
No, the clickable will do it too. Spam, it's in the content of the page. So.
Oh, really?
There's really no way to do it, an easy way to solve this. So thank you, Mike, for the call. We're going to go
on
to other people.
Thank you so much. What a lot of information. I appreciate it.
Good
Keep
luck.
Going, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
From Palo, Colorado Canyon, Jim, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning. Geeks, question for you guys. When I'm printing from a website, I often lose the right margin of the page that I'm printing. It cuts off and I lose that text or data on the right side.
Okay.
What can I do?
You're using Internet Explorer?
Internet Explorer. I'm running XP Pro on a Sony LX800 desktop.
I haven't actually solved this problem, but my assumption would be, one way to deal with it, would be to reduce the width of your browser before you print. Anybody feel that's accurate? Dean, does that sound insane?
Yeah, what's happening is, I've seen this before, your browser is, when you open it, it's the size of your screen, which is very wide.
Mm-hmm.
And, make your browser narrower, because depending on how wide your browser is, tells it whether it's going to print in a portrait or...
Right. Yeah.
Or the
or
wider
landscape.
Your landscape mode.
Okay, so how do I do this?
So you just take the... Wait, hang on a second, Dee. I'm sorry, we don't have you yet, but... Dee, do you want to answer this?
If you go to page setup, file page setup, there's a you can specify some of those things. It also
I'm just getting there now.
Here's the other way to deal with it.
There's
Jim.
Margins that you can edit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Jim. Here's another solution for it. So what Sean and I are suggesting is that your browser width is really wide and it doesn't actually fit on the page, and so things are getting messed up. So what you need to do is you need to make your browser window the correct width so that it will print correctly. And
right.
The way you do that, you're on a Windows machine, correct?
Right.
Okay. On your XP, is that true? Windows XP.
Yeah.
Okay. In the upper right-hand corner of your browser window is a red box and a green. I can't remember the number, the colors and everything. There's one that's not maximized. You don't want to maximize your browser.
Oh, I know.
Sean,
actually, I think Dee Dee hit it on the head. If you just go to File menu and go to Page Setup, just make sure the orientation set to Portrait. And if the data on the page is still too wide for a portrait, reduce the margins. I mean, right now they're at 0.75 inches. So
okay.
That's almost an inch margin. That's a lot of space on all around. So reduce the margins. That might help too.
Okay.
Otherwise, just do landscape. Yeah, just select landscape, and that way it'll reorient the page.
When you go to print and you get that box for preferences and so forth.
Yeah.
No, you need to do page setup before you print.
Okay.
Yeah. They're two different selections.
Good luck, Jim.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
And back to our discussion about downloading songs from Santa Cruz. Charles, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to comment that why they would be seeking a higher price for individual songs, and it's if you look at what's on a CD and what people will buy online. I'm sure you guys could track it. There's a lot of filler. Typically, you know, when a band puts something together, they've got so many songs they got to put in, and they fill it up with stuff that nobody wants to hear or isn't popular. And so, I think the industry is finding that people are kind of pinning down exactly what they want to buy. And I know there's some people that I know who download music. They get just the songs that they want. And
that's a very good point.
That's a really good point.
Not any more profit, you know.
You know, that's interesting because it totally changes, of course, the album feel. I mean, we knew this from picking and choosing your purchases. The album feel has been completely changed. I recall albums that I loved, you know, in high school and stuff, that
right.
A few songs I was like, eh. But I listened to them because I was playing them on tape or I was playing them on an album. And it's kind of hard to skip it, right? So
right.
I listened to the whole song. And now when I hear that song, I like that song more.
I expect the song
original.
To come after one when
yeah,
I hear it on
exactly.
the radio now because I listen to whole albums growing
yeah.
up.
And so there's this whole thing about that music that has some inherent some quality that's not necessarily something you choose right away, but something you learn to love, will be lost completely with this pick and choose. So I understand that. And I also, Charles, it's very insightful of you, of course, that makes complete sense. People aren't buying the entire album. They're only buying a few songs. Therefore, the industry is not making as much money on the music.
But then it's a statement saying, yeah, we know that a lot of the songs are horrible or just not very good.
The artist will never say that.
Right. It's like, where's the call to say, okay, then make some more consistently good songs?
Well, but that's the thing is, it's not.
I don't really believe that argument.
You don't? DD, explain.
I don't really believe that argument.
It's pretty difficult, yeah. I mean, if either you've got it or you don't,
it's highly profitable.
Hang on a second, you guys. I'm sorry. Both of you can't hear each other, so you're both talking. So I've worked it up. So DD, go ahead. Say that again. They just want more money?
It's just they want more money. They're making 65 cents out of 99 cents at the moment, and they just want more of they want a higher share. Just like with CD sales, the CD prices seem to actually have gone up rather than gone down, even though, you know, the cost of manufacturing has been reduced so heavily. I mean, songs, CDs that you would have bought 10 years ago are cheaper then than they are now.
Okay, Charles, back to you. What were you saying?
I was just saying there are those few pivotal albums that that a lot of people remember. I mean, okay, Computer from Radiohead is an example of a recent album. Almost every song on it, people that I know love every song, you know. But follow-up albums, yeah. We're going to get better productivity out of rock stars, I think, probably.
There's also always people that are purchasing music that, you know, they heard the song that's real popular online. They go to the store. They don't find a single. They find CDs with full albums, so they buy that album. So they're spending $12 or whatever it is for the album for one song. And online, they only have to buy one song. So, Didi, I think that's the idea that Charles is getting at. And I'd agree with it. And, Didi, I think you're perfectly accurate. They want more music or more money. I personally feel, and I'm probably naive in this, that as the technology improves and it gets distributed, the music industry is going to take the most suffer. And I don't mind that at all, as long as the musicians aren't. So
maybe what should happen is artists can decide which songs of theirs are good and which ones are bad, charge more for the good ones, and if it's a concept album, just charge straight across the board for all of them.
That seems like probably the best model.
And what about a solution in which a musician just doesn't go with a big CD producer and just goes with iTunes? Goes with Apple.
That could happen.
Does it directly.
Also, instead of making
their stuff away for free, and then, you know, they get lots of people in at their concerts instead.
Yeah.
And maybe instead of making the artist choose, because that's tough. I mean, all the songs are great, right? Maybe the ones that are actually made into videos and put on radio stations, you know, the ones that are really pushed, maybe those should be charged a little more.
And of course, there's also the idea that it's possible that musicians, you know, just to fill a CD are producing a filler song. They know it themselves. They'd to release three songs, only three songs, and be able to sell those. And this idea that you have to conform to a CD doesn't necessarily mean has an artistic merit, right?
Right, and I think there's like a, and you're looking at a deadline, a date to push, just like any software or anything that you might develop, you've got to have so many features at a certain time and get it out there. Now maybe they'll have the freedom to create more creatively over time, and if there's a song that comes out,
yeah, I agree.
You know, every month or every week.
A B-side should not cost as much as an A-side single.
Right.
Charles, thanks for the call.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to go to Pacific Grove. Paul, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey.
Hey.
I had a question, two-part question. One, I'm really interested in a tablet PC, but I keep getting this feeling that it's like a technology that kind of came and became a niche thing and is now going to go away.
It's not going away. I'm just about to buy one.
I'm a music teacher, and I have this great idea of being able to actually use a pen and put notes instead of using a mouse. And so, assuming it is going to be around, I keep reading about Dothan and Sonoma and these new technologies, and I'm wondering if you guys know whether it's really worth waiting for that technology or go for, say, something current where I might be able to save a little money.
Sean, you've got 3 minutes to talk about tablet PCs. Go.
Well, tablet PCs are different than the chips themselves. Don't wait for a processor. If you need a notebook now, I mean, Centrino's pretty nice.
Okay.
You know, I think what's going to happen is chips going to start using less power, so your battery life gets increased, while still trying to give you as much performance as possible. That's kind of where everyone's moving in the notebook world. But as far as tablet PC, yeah, I think it's a very cool technology. I just like the fact that I can read a full page in portrait mode and change pages really easily. I mean, it almost turns your notebook into a book because you can swivel your screen around, lay it down flat, and hold it in your lap and actually read, you know, surf the web, whatever, using a pen. And I think that's great. I don't see why that would go away. In fact, I think more notebooks should go to that. But as far as processor, yeah, there's always going to be new processors coming out. And at some point, you just got to make a decision and go for it.
All right. But so is there, in a sentence, what is the special quality or technique that's involved in the Sonoma and Dothan? I keep hearing, like, it's doing something not revolutionary but significant enough to consider, or is it not a big deal at all?
You know, I didn't really look into the process, the chips announcements this week closely, but you know what? I think what I'm going to do is look at them for next week and talk about that.
Sean, you played with these tablet PCs. Do you think they're worth the investment if you're...
Well, okay, so Dothan is a 90-nanometer version of the Centrino chip.
Okay.
So what's happening is Dothan is a next generation where the chips are smaller. The transistors are smaller. So they use less power, but provide more performance.
Right.
It's going to cost you more money.
So that's
like
a great thing, Paul. I mean, you basically can wait for a better, faster machine. You can always do that.
And then they're talking about dual cores, but see, dual cores use more power.
Right, so not
so
good performance.
When they're plugged into the wall, you get all kinds of performance, but when you don't, from what I hear, one of those cores will be turned off, so you won't be any better off than you were before.
I feel that's very good.
Thank you. I'll look into that. Thanks, Paul,
for the call.
Keep us on your dial. We'll definitely address it again. We're going to go with a person from Santa Cruz. Elisa, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning. I'm one of those dinosaurs that still uses Windows 98.
Okay, we'll talk slow. No, I'm just kidding. Go on.
And I am considering upgrading to XP. And the debate is, do I simply, you know, install XP over 98, or do I go get a whole new hard drive, install it there, and then migrate, you know, schlep everything over onto the new hard drive?
Is this a laptop or a desktop?
Desktop.
How old is this desktop?
It's got three hard drives in it because I can get them very inexpensively. It's the last upgrade was probably a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Can you move all the data off of you know, one hard drive so you don't have to go out and buy a new one?
That would be an alternative. I don't know if I would have to check to see if I had enough space.
Actually, I have a more pertinent question. Why do you want to move from 98 to XP? Is there a specific reason that software that you want to use?
Part of it is I use XP at work and 98 at home. I stayed with 98 because, you know, after 2000, it was like, I don't think we're going to get off of this one. But I had figured that there's hopefully improvements being done, and so I was considering upgrading.
If it were me, I wouldn't install over 98. I would take my fastest, newest hard drive and make that my Windows hard drive. I would install XP fresh.
Are you good at installing hard drives? Do you know how to do this?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, that's the way
to go. And the other thing you want to do is do not have all your hard drives connected when you install Windows. unplugged two of them, so you only have one hard drive, so that your drive letters are
and set
your C drive.
And set it up this way, Lisa. Just take a new blank drive, if you have one and it's convenient, and put it in the machine. Make sure it's the primary IDE, because it's 98 machines, it's going to be ATA IDE drive. Make sure it's the primary and on the first channel, and insert your CD and install Windows XP. And just do that. And then after you do that, the only problem with this is you have to reinstall all your applications.
Which is kind of a pain. Yeah.
But you know what? Your performance is going to increase. Installing all your applications again, Dee Dee?
I used to feel kind of refreshed whenever I had to do that.
It is a refreshing thing. Reinstalling your operating system is a cleansing experience.
The Calgon, take me away.
I mean, it doesn't feel that way when you're halfway through and it's not working. And that's a horrible nightmare. But
yeah.
But that's the great thing about doing it this way.
It's like a new system.
If it doesn't work, you're not in a bad shape. You just wasted time. You haven't lost data. You haven't had really hair-pulling experiences. You've just spent the evening watching television while every once in a while you switch over and you push a couple buttons. So that way you're not in jeopardy. And then after you've done that, you take your other drives that you want your data, to access and stuff. I use the Windows drive first. You put it on that machine. Make sure it's not the primary so that it can read. They can both be read. Boot your machine back up and then just copy the content you want over. Don't copy applications. Reinstall the applications, but copy your content over. And then you can wipe that drive too, but do that 3 weeks later to make sure you've got all your content. And that's the way to go.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the call.
Thanks.
It's amazing
Bye.
How fast Windows is when you first install it. And then you install Service Pack 2, and it just goes to a slow crawl.
Slow, yeah.
That actually wasn't my experience at all. I put Service Pack 2 on.
I've noticed that recently, and when I add more applications, it just gets slower.
Yeah, adding more applications. I guess when I did it, though, I did a clean install, and then I put Service Pack 2 on a clean install, so it wasn't a...
Yeah, so did I. But I noticed it took a lot longer to boot from then on.
Scott from Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah,
you're there. Hi.
Hey, I got, two questions. Let's start with this one first. A news story came out. Some Japanese students had done an exhaustive study and had come with a conclusive link that long-term computer usage, 5+ years, mm-hmm. 4 or more hours a day, 5 to 10. They linked glaucoma mm-hmm. with people who were nearsighted. I'm wondering if you've got any more information on that. I wasn't able to get anything else.
I don't, but the person I would ask would be Dr. Don Motika on Saturday mornings, 9 o'clock here on KOSP. She'd know the answer to that. I don't know much about
the human body. She would know the answer, yeah.
Or at least she'd be able to research it.
Yeah.
Right, and I'm wondering if you know anything. Is there anything about refresh rates or anything that, some people's eyes stress out more or less at different rates?
They sure do, especially if there are fluorescent lights in the room because they refresh at 60 hertz. And so if you keep your refresh rate, it's normal. On your desktop system?
I've got a laptop.
Okay. Oh, well, the laptop's not going to matter.
No refresh rate
on the
laptop,
LCD,
really. I mean, effectively.
Yeah, LCD doesn't have a refresh.
It does have a refresh, but it's so fast that it's not the same kind of thing.
No.
On a CCD, you've got
a CRT, which is a big blocky monitor.
Yeah, TV-type things. You've got this thing scanning all of the lines. It's one thing putting data onto the screen all the time. On LCDs, it's not like that. And also the material that's illuminating on LCD has more, isn't affected by its pulsing, if you will, unlike the glowing screen of a CRT. So that's not that much of an issue. At the same time, I wouldn't just totally dismiss it as it probably, it won't damage you. I don't know that answer, and I'm not gonna claim that it is.
I
feel totally safe if that helps.
I mean, I love my screen. I've got a nice, both my girlfriend and I have got a Fujitsu laptop. And by the way, you mentioned that you thought the maximum hard drive on a laptop was 60. She's actually got an 80. Gigabyte
nice.
Drive on hers.
Yeah, okay.
But I noticed that as much as a gorgeous screen for pictures, I kind of look at it sometimes like it just feels like my eyes don't really want to be looking at it. And that's not even having looked at it that long.
Right.
That
there's one thing that happens for me when I play games. I'll keep my eyes open. I won't blink very much. That's not good. That, of course, will hurt.
I have astigmatism. And when I don't wear my special glasses for looking at the computer,
right.
My eyes hurt.
Yeah.
So you got a little astigmatism.
Astigmatism means your eye's not round.
Right.
They understood. Can correct that with glasses. So you might want to look into getting a special pair of glasses for your computer.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're going to ask about eyes, that's the way to go.
That really solved my problem.
Go ahead and go to your optometrist. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay, can I ask you one more question?
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
I asked someone this one question. They said that in laptops, it's hard to get really good sound card quality because of the small space they're having to cram it in, and you put all those components so tight they don't really get to shield themselves from each other. I notice that once in a while when I even just wave my hand over the left side of the computer, I get a little hum kind of feedback coming through my speakers, and I'm wondering if you know anything about what's up with that.
Sure, it's called noise, and it can exist for a lot of reasons. I don't think it's probably coming from your laptop. I think it's... Are your speakers powered?
My speakers are powered, yeah.
Okay, so I would assume this. What's happening is there's a low signal level going from your laptop to your speakers, and somewhere you're
even
inducing
like,
power.
I'll wave my hand. I don't even have to make contact with the unit. When I wave my hand just over that left side of the computer, it goes...
Where the plug is?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so you're inducing it into the audio output device in the laptop. Kind of a shame.
What if he turns off his internal port? Would that help?
Well, no, I think the microphone's probably off.
To do with that, huh?
No, I think it has to do with your right. It's a something's wrong. There's a bug in that piece that allows inducing of radio frequency. Basically, is what you're hearing, static noise. So there's nothing really you can do about that laptop unless you're an electronics whiz and you want to go in there and try to find out where the low impedance is and try to fix it.
Shield it.
But I wouldn't do that in the laptop. I would just accept that if you know, just like the doctor says, it hurts your raising arm like that, don't do that. I think that's the best solution. Unfortunately, of course, your keyboard's probably pretty close to the spot that it's problematic. You could, of course, try to shield it. It's very possible that your laptop itself on the top of it isn't metallic, but it's plastic.
It is.
So you could try to take some like aluminum foil just to test it, right? Lay it over that section. Make sure that aluminum foil is connected to a screw on the laptop so it's grounded and see if that gets rid of it. And if it does, you could get like some sticky metallic material and just stick it on there. That might take care of it. That's how simple shielding is. So make sure it's grounded.
Okay, great. Thank you for that info.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to be able to take, I believe, one more call, and it's going to be, stay tuned, geeks, it's going to be line one, who is Martin. So, Martin, stay on. Everybody else, I'm sorry. You can give us email if you'd like or call back next week, and we'll take your calls. Martin, welcome to Geek Speak.
So, my question, I hope there's a quick answer for it. Computer novice here on this end of the phone. I've got a Mac G3. It has no backup capabilities on it.
Uh-huh.
And I've been told that a card reader is a really good way to go. I'm wondering
if
you can talk about that for a while.
Is your G3 a beige computer or a blue computer?
It's actually a greenish one.
Okay. So it's tall.
It's tallish, yeah.
Tall with kind of poofy sides.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's the later version G3, which is good. That machine has FireWire and USB.
Uh-huh.
Probably USB 2, but it definitely has, I think it has FireWire. Card reader, not so much. The thing with card readers, what we're talking about is you're talking about a flash card reader, something of that nature. And those are used for cameras and things. But
can I listen off the telephone?
Yeah, please. You don't have to stay on.
Thanks.
But we can't ask any more questions. Okay, we're going to finish Martin's call. No, so Martin's basically saying, I want to back up an old machine, but I want to do it on something that's usable. And a card reader really is for small data sets. It's for... you can get cards, flash cards that are 4 gig and stuff, but still that's not very big compared to 20 and 30 gig hard drives in that G3. So I would recommend an external FireWire drive or USB drive. Make sure that the machine has FireWire drive. You look in the back and the connector, what does the FireWire connector look like? It kind of looks like a rectangle with a curved end.
Pretty much
that. And so what you want to do is if it's got that, then you just go out and get a FireWire drive. And pretty much any FireWire drive, if you purchase now, you'll be able to plug into that. While the machine is on, you plug it in, and you'll see a little icon show up. You double-click that, and you move your files to it, and that's it. And if you don't have that connector on the back, which I believe you do, you can do USB, and that's what your keyboard and mouse are, the same thing. And you want to make sure that the USB drive, just plug it into the back the first time, and if it works well, you can try plugging it into the keyboard.
There are always DVD burners, too.
Could get a DVD burner, though. The software, you'd have to get external software, too, for the Mac, and it's kind of hard to upgrade your machine to have burning capabilities in the Mac environment,
right?
Because you have to buy certain drives. So I think that's a good solution.
We had another caller about, can you damage a FireWire port?
Oh, okay.
And yes, you can. And
so
I've done
how do you not damage it?
I don't know. They just seem to stop working after a while.
One thing I'd recommend strongly is that the machine is moving or doing anything, don't unplug it. The other thing you can do is you can eject or tell the system to stop using that drive. A Macintosh, you throw that drive in the trash can. On the Windows machine, in the taskbar on the lower right, there should be a little little like arrow icon with a green arrow on top of it. You double click that, and it allows you to disconnect safely a FireWire drive. Do that every time you want to disconnect a drive. The other thing to do is you can power it down before you unplug it. I don't know if that helps or not, but it doesn't hurt as long as you're not writing to the drive. All right, we are out of time on GeekSpeak, and I've talked too much like I always do. Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. The Geeks This Morning, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, Dee Dee Hubbard. I'm Lyle Troxell. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. We'll be back next week. Coming up next, Open Road with Matt Pierce. But first, a little bit of NPR News.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. An Italian government official has confirmed that an Italian journalist held hostage for a month in Iraq has been set free. Details of her release are still not known. NPR's Sylvia Pagioli reports from Rome.
There was a mood of jubilation here as word spread of the release of Giuliana Sgrena, correspondent of the leftist daily Il Manifesto. Sgrena's abduction on February 4th touched a special nerve among Italians. The country mobilized massively over the last several weeks.